Tonight, Americans bracing for another financial storm. Inflation on the rise, mortgage rates through the roof. Oh, and it is almost tax day two. Our experts are here with the financial secrets that you just cannot miss to afford, including why your savings account might be costing you money. And then he went all in, then he was all out. What is going on with Twitter and Elon Musk? Is the richest man in the world toying with your retirement? Plus, an Instagram model covered in blood after stabbing her boyfriend to death. Was it murder or was it self-defense? And the chilling footage of her right after the incident has many wondering about her very unusual behavior. And finally, with things not going his way in Ukraine, Vladimir Putin may have just crossed a very bold red line. Reports of chemical weapons in Ukraine now hitting the headlines as the butcher of Syria is tapped to head Putin's assault on Ukraine. That is all tonight on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. I'm Brian Enten in for Ashley tonight. Bad news is coming, but how bad will it be? Tomorrow, the Consumer Price Index report will be released for the month of March. It is the thing that measures just how bad inflation is. We've all seen prices going up in the stores, but you might not realize how high they really are. In February, prices were up 7.9% from the year before. Experts think the March report will be even uglier, with prices up as much as 8.5%. That would be the highest overall inflation rate since 1981. Think about that. You are spending nearly 10% more on everything you buy, groceries, gas, and electricity. It would be okay if our paychecks were going up too, but I think you know they're just not. Americans are paying higher prices but making the same amount of money, and it is not going unnoticed. For the third consecutive month, U.S. shoppers say they are pessimistic about the economy, with consumer sentiment at an 11-year low. So what can be done about it? Well, the Federal Reserve plans to raise interest rates. Analysts expect the Fed to raise them by half a percentage point in May and maybe another half percentage point in June. They hope that that will be enough to, quote, cool off the economy by encouraging people to save their money and hopefully finally bring the prices down. But it'll also make it more difficult for Americans to take a step up the financial ladder. Higher interest rates mean higher mortgages, car loans, and credit card rates. That is going to be tough for would-be homeowners. Last year, a 30-year fixed rate mortgage was under 3%. Now it's over 5%. Home prices, they are just not helping either. The price of a home is up 32% over the past 2 years. Buyers didn't feel the pinch when mortgage rates were low during the pandemic, but now that really, really hurts. So what are you supposed to do? Move your money around and be aggressive, or keep your head down and hope that it blows over soon? Fortunately, tonight I am joined by two people who know what all of this means, because gosh, it can be complicated, and exactly what you should do about it. Catherine Tuggle is the chief content officer of HerMoney.com and the co-author of the book How to Money. And George Camel is a personal finance expert and the host of the Fine Print podcast. Catherine, I want to start with you. All of us think about this every day. The price of everything is going up. If you want to buy a house, so many people can't afford it. You want to go buy a car, they're not available, or the used cars are so expensive. Gas going up, groceries going up. Tomorrow, the big announcement. Do you think that things are finally going to go in the right direction, or is it just going to get worse?
Look, I think we are headed for high inflationary times. I do not think that housing prices are going to come down anytime soon. And I think that mortgage rates are just going to be on the rise. But, you know, I would just encourage everybody to just take a breath. Calm down. There is no need to take action. I think we all have this human instinct to take action, to do something when we feel that inflationary leak to our spending power. But, you know, I've heard so many reports, as I know you guys have, of people paying $200,000 over asking price for a house. This is crazy. It would be so much better to pay 7% mortgage on a house that is $200,000 cheaper. So I think the most important thing we can do right now is just to keep things into perspective. If you have a car that that's still getting you from point A to point B, don't do anything. Don't make any changes. You know, live as if we are in a recession before we get to that recession. I think so many of us who lived through 2008, we already know how to pull back. We already know how to save money. And I would just take a deep breath and a step back and look at everything from a 360-degree point of view.
Yeah, it's good advice to stay calm and to take a deep breath. But obviously, it's just so worrisome when you're getting the same paycheck every 2 weeks, but the cost of everything is so much more expensive. George, Fed raising interest rates, another raise expected. Do you think that's really going to help? It just seems like there's so much more going on besides these interest rates.
Yeah, this strategy has been used in the past with success. So I am an optimist. I think this could definitely help with some things, because when we raise these rates, we're going to see the demand go down, which could help with inflation. And as much as I want to be an economist and a fortune teller, I'm not. And so what I can do is control the guy in the mirror. I can start to get on a budget. I can be on a written plan. I can start to dial down all of my unnecessary expenses, sell things, maybe go get another job temporarily to bring in some extra income. Those kinds of things will really help you create that margin in your money.
And Catherine, you mentioned people paying way over asking price. I mean, it is insane when you hear about some of these offers. For people at home who have saved some money, want to buy a house, are sick of renting, do you suggest waiting at this point?
I think waiting is a far better option than feeling pressure to make a move and then ending up house poor for the next 30 years. You know, things are going to change, and you can take that money that you've so diligently saved for a down payment and you can put that into an I-bond. You can put that into a high yield savings account so that inflation isn't eating away at your money, and you can just be patient. You know, don't feel the pressure to waive an inspection and pay far above asking just to get a house because everybody else is getting a house. It's okay to sit back and take a breath. You know, we all know real estate is a wonderful asset. It's a wonderful asset and investment for your future, but getting into a house that's not quite right or getting into a house that is overly expensive, that's not a smart investment.
George, let's talk about credit cards, because so many of us have credit card debt. I was reading this crazy statistic. In 2021, credit card usage was up 25% over pre-pandemic levels. Is now the time to pay off your credit card debt if you've got some extra money, or is it best to wait?
You know, in my book, it's always a good day to pay off your credit card debt. I'm a big fan of becoming debt-free and staying debt-free. And this is the time to do it, absolutely, because we're feeling the pinch. When you're living paycheck to paycheck, with 78% of Americans are, it's because of things like consumer debt. And so the faster we can get rid of credit card debt, we can start using our debit card and using money we actually have, the better off we're going to be. And people following the Ramsey plan, they pay off all of their consumer debt on average in 18 to 24 months.
Catherine, let me ask you this. I've got this buddy who is a money manager, and he was explaining something to me the other night that just sort of like made my brain explode. He was explaining that if right now you just keep your money in a savings account, because of inflation, you're losing money. So you think you're saving money, but you're actually losing money every day, every month that goes by. Can you explain that? And what are your thoughts on savings accounts right now?
So you are saving money. First of all, if you're saving money in a savings account, you're saving money. But we know that inflation is a slow leak to our buying power. So if you're earning a dollar today, inflation is going to make that worth 80 cents in a few decades. But that leak to your power, that substantive leak that he's talking about losing money, that takes decades, right? And we all need money liquid. The worst thing that anyone can face right now is to have to draw down our investments in the stock market because we don't have enough cash to pay for our daily necessities. So having money in savings is not a bad thing. You have to have enough liquid to support yourself. But if we only have a savings account and we don't invest in the stock market where we can see averages of 8% returns every year, that's a mistake. That's why investing is so important for our long-term financial futures, in our 401ks, in our IRAs, in our brokerage accounts. But you have to have a mix. You have to have a mix of savings and a mix of investments.
Makes sense, yeah. And I think in this time of uncertainty, a lot of people just feel more comfortable putting it in a savings account right now. I know at least that's how I feel a lot of the time. Let me ask you this, George. Over the weekend, I sort of had one of those weekends where I watched a lot of TV, and it seemed like every other commercial was someone on TV telling me because of these uncertain times that I should buy gold, buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. Is this just sort of like a fad on TV, or is someone making money off this, or is this actually a good idea right now?
Well, someone's definitely making money off of this, and it's not you as the investor. I am not a fan of investing in precious metals as a hedge against inflation, as a hedge against the dollar. What we've seen in the last 10 years, the rate of return on gold is abysmal. I mean, it's 3.7%, while the stock market averaged 12% over the same amount of time. So if things really go down and the dollar collapses, we're going to be wanting to barter for things like gasoline and ammo and food and water, not a bar of gold. So it's a commodity, it's super volatile, and I don't want you putting your money on that roller coaster. Avoid the ride completely.
Good advice, because we all see the commercials all the time, it seems like. Catherine, let me ask you, there's so much bad news that we hear about the economy every day. It can be so depressing. Are there any sort of tricks right now that you know about? Are there ways to actually make money in an economy like this?
Well, we know that the hiring market is better than it has been in quite some time. We're hearing reports of people increasing their salaries by 20 to 30%. If you are looking for a job, I would say get your resume refreshed and don't be afraid to get out there. And there are some shopping hacks that we've seen people use with good success. Start with the cheapest stores first. You know, don't go to Whole Foods first. Don't go to the gourmet market first. Start at the dollar store. Start at Aldi and see what you can knock off your list from the cheapest possible retailer. And I know that we all fell into the comfort of online shopping during the pandemic, but online shopping is quite often more expensive. It's quite often more money to order things to have it shipped to your door. So if you are fully vaccinated and you are feeling like getting back out there again, don't just add to cart haphazardly. Get out there and get back into the store and see what kind of deals you can find.
Yeah, I think we've all sort of gotten used to the convenience of things that we got used to during the pandemic. But even like Uber Eats, that kind of stuff really does cost so much more. You can save yourself a lot of money. George, my final question for you. You know, so many people living paycheck to paycheck right now, we mentioned they're getting paid the same, but inflation has been going up. If you feel like you just can't save, I mean, you put your money towards the bills every 2 weeks and there's just very little left over. How do you get out of that? I mean, what's your advice?
Well, the best thing you can do is look at your reality. Look at all of your bank transactions and start to do a budget. Your income minus your expenses, I want it to equal zero, meaning you've given every single dollar a job. So once you have all of your expenses in your budget, do a budget audit. See every single area you can shave off a few dollars. Maybe it's shopping your insurance and getting some better premiums in your life. Maybe it's cutting out those expensive grocery stores like Catherine mentioned and shopping at Aldi. Anywhere you can shave off those expenses, it's going to feel like you got a raise. So that's the number one key I would tell people is get on a written budget every single month and stick to it.
Yeah, it certainly does seem like every little bit helps when you add it all up. Catherine and George, thank you so much. Those were amazing tips. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on, as if out of control inflation and rising interest rates just wasn't enough, we are also a week away from tax day. I know, if you haven't done it yet, it's startling. As of April 1st, the IRS has processed more than 89 million returns and issued more than 63 million refunds worth a collective $204 billion. The average refund is worth just over $3,300, much larger than last year's average. That was about $2,800. And if you are at home right now saying, wait a minute, I never get a refund that big, well, we have got the perfect guest for you right now. Phyllis Cavallone-Jurek is the executive director of Ladder Up, a nonprofit focused on offering free financial resources to low-income residents. Last year, Ladder Up prepared more than 6,000 tax returns, secured more than $14 million in refunds for hardworking families and individuals all over. Phyllis, thank you so much for being with us. First of all, the first thing I want to ask you, seems like every year there's sort of new little tricks and secrets to get the biggest refund. What's your advice this year?
Be organized. Come to us or come to your tax preparer with all your documentation, all your receipts, if you have receipts, and have kind of a game plan to kind of walk through everything. If you need to go through even maybe your checking or savings account or maybe your credit card monthly history to see if there's anything there that could be garnered to kind of help. that would be very much appreciated, and it'll help you help the tax preparer do the job to get you the best refund possible.
Yeah, I get it. It's this time of year when everyone wishes that they were more organized, yeah. Right? So I want to ask you, you know, during the pandemic, our lifestyles changed a lot. People were home a lot more. Are there deductions out there that maybe we're not thinking of because we've never had them in the past, but because of the way our lifestyles changed, we might qualify now?
Yes. I'd like everybody, you know, piggybacking off of what we just heard, you can never have too many receipts. You can never be thinking too much in this space that you mentioned. We find a lot of people are drivers, in fact, as we talked about a lot of online deliveries, services, and things of that nature. They're Uber drivers and what have you, and they haven't collected their miles. They haven't logged in. They aren't tracking that. So keep receipts. It's better to come to your tax preparer with too many receipts and too much documentation than not enough. A lot of people are doing a lot of things and it's out of their pocket and they know they've done things, but they haven't. I suggest whenever I sit down with a client and they're doing things either out of their home, their car, or they've started something independent, to create some kind of folder system that's either in their car, right at next to their computer at home, wherever it makes sense in their home, even if it's right coming into the front door and there's a table there and that's where everything kind of resides. Whatever works for you to do it, start doing it. You won't be sorry.
Is it better, Phyllis, to go online to a website and have your taxes done there? Sometimes it's free online, or to pay a bit of money and go to one of the offices and have an account and do it that you meet face to face? Does it make a difference?
It could make a difference. So if you, I would check online first and also be aware of your income threshold. There's different income thresholds. For instance, we run a VITA program out of Ladder Up. You might qualify for services for free for in-person, and that is obviously the best, and I'm always going to recommend it because I want every bit of money to be in our client's pocket as possible. If you're computer savvy enough, you feel you could understand the questions to go along with a free file option, and you're able to do it yourself, that's also fine. I would say the paid preparer is a bit of the last resort if you find that you're just overwhelmed, it's very complicated, you may not qualify for some free services, you're outside of some income thresholds, you know. But look at your options first. I always recommend looking at and going on the IRS.gov site and seeing what's there first before you make a decision to pay.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure, like, if you coughed up a couple hundred bucks, is it worth it in the end? And you end up getting, you know, more money and you're happy that you spent the money.
Sometimes it's psychological and some people just feel better if they go through that process. But also beware, because sometimes those processes, every form or pieces of paper do have tied a fee that might be hidden. So you want to ask the right questions. You want to really know what you're going to do before you sign on for the service. So if you are ready to pay a couple hundred dollars, it stays that amount and there's no surprises.
Okay, I want to get to as many questions as I can. This is a big one I've heard. What if you forgot to file your taxes in the past? What do you do now?
You could still file. You know, the IRS is pretty lenient depending on how far back. We see clients that have many years. We dealt with a few today that had 2016 all the way up to 2021, and that's fine. So you might also need to work with a tax lawyer. Again, free services where you can is ideal. But we do want you to file and as quickly as possible. If for this year you don't know if you're going to be able to hit that deadline, I'd like you to file an extension. However, by April 18th, it'll get you about 6 months reprieve. Hopefully it's only because you're missing a document or if there's a life circumstance that kind of has derailed you a bit. If you do think you're going to owe some money, fees and interest do accrue. So we want you to be able to estimate your liability and send what you think might be something that you owe on its way. We don't want the interest and fees to be kind of growing on you unsuspectingly.
So probably better to just own up to it and address the issue if you forgot to file in the past. Let me ask you my last question here. You brought it up, extension. If you're just not ready, you're thinking tonight, oh my gosh, like I'm not ready. I forgot all about this. There's a million other things going on in the world. How does the extension process work?
So there is a form and you submit it and it'll get you about 6 months. The form is 4868 and you have to file online by April 18th. It'll get you to about October 17th. But remember, if it's because you don't have all your documentation ready, that's one thing. If you think it's because you owe something, if you kind of can estimate, they're going to ask you, can you estimate your liability? You probably should send something on its way along with that form so that the IRS has a bit of that. You can submit this online and what have you, because once April 18th hits, those things do start ticking away and we want you to minimize the impact of whatever you might owe. But a lot of services have summer or fall, submissions. So you can file and if you need a little more wiggle room, so please look into that. We don't want anybody to miss it. But I will say, if you think you have everything and want to file and you can squeeze it in by April 18th, I really encourage people to find that time and do that. That really is ideal if you have everything.
Better to do it now. But if you need the extension, you can do the extension. Phyllis, Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's a stressful time. You helped break everything down. Thank you. Okay, coming up, the richest man in the world laid out a multi-billion dollar bet last week, putting himself in a powerful position at one of the most ubiquitous social media companies. Could Elon Musk be trying to prove a point at the cost of your retirement? And later, reports of the use of chemical weapons out of Ukraine, and it coincides perfectly with Putin's appointment of a Russian general with a track record for brutality. Is it about to go from bad to much, much worse? While the rest of us are scrimping and saving just to get through the month, one billionaire went on a shopping spree. Elon Musk gobbled up nearly 10% of Twitter shares last week and proudly announced his intent to join Twitter's board of directors. But just days later, another announcement said he's no longer joining. That announcement pushed Tesla stock down almost 5% today, while Twitter is up nearly 2% by market's close. Is the richest man in the world manipulating the market, and are our retirement accounts literally hanging in the balance during all of this? News Nation's West Coast correspondent, Nancy Liu, she's been working on this all day. Nancy, this has been a crazy weekend. I was following the tweets constantly, and then he ended up deleting the tweets. But beyond the drama and the soap opera of all this, what does this really mean for regular people, and could it impact our retirement accounts?
Well, Brian, as you mentioned, Twitter stock is up. So anyone who owns Twitter stock, you're making more. If it's in your investment portfolio, it's worth more. But Elon Musk definitely has all kinds of people guessing. His stake in Twitter was a surprise revealed last week. And then in the last 24 hours, another surprise as he flipped about serving on the Twitter board.
He is well known for disrupting the car and space industries. Then last week, Elon Musk looked poised to shake up Twitter after buying up a 9.2% stake, making him the company's largest shareholder.
Hey, everyone.
The billionaire was invited to join the Twitter board last Tuesday, but then this Sunday tweet from CEO Parag Agrawal revealing that Musk decided not to join. In a company note, Agrawal warned of distractions ahead and said the company will remain open to input from Musk.
I think he's trying to figure out how he can exert the most influence over Twitter. And as he continued to weigh the pros and cons, I think he figured out that he could actually have more influence over Twitter without being a board member.
The board drama follows days of sarcastic Musk tweets, including a poll of his 81 million followers on whether Twitter's headquarters should be turned into a homeless shelter. And he asked whether Twitter is dying, since many with top accounts rarely tweet. Nothing from Taylor Swift in 3 months, and Justin Bieber, one post all year. Of note, the Twitter board invitation had stipulated that Musk could own no more than a 14 16.9% stake in the company. But since he turned down a seat, Musk can now buy even more.
I'm absolutely sure there's strategy behind his decision, as every great business person does. He's got something going on behind the scenes. Does he want more? Well, we won't know until he makes the change, and we'll probably hear it on Twitter first.
But so far today, no new tweets from Elon Musk or any kind of public comment on the situation from Twitter. But Brian, as you know, all kinds of people talking about what's going on.
Oh, yeah, it was interesting, Nancy, after such an active weekend, he just kind of went silent today. You have to wonder, was he just sort of tweeting on his cell phone over the weekend, or was this sort of more organized? I mean, what do you think? Do you think this is just a game to Musk? Do you think he's just having fun with this, or do you think there's something more serious behind it?
Well, a lot of people were wondering what his true intentions are. There's even speculation, is he just a bored billionaire? I mean, is he wondering, oh, Jeff Bezos, the second richest man, he's got his own media arm with the Washington Post. Maybe I need to have some kind of media arm. Let's grab Twitter. So there's speculation about whether, is this a bored billionaire, or does he truly want to do something with Twitter? In his SEC filing today, he did call it an investment opportunity. And Brian, it might be a true investment. I mean, Twitter, solid company. There are 396 million users, and active users every day, over 200 million use Twitter every day.
Yeah, the possibility of just a bored billionaire. It's a crazy world we live in. I got to say this, though, Nancy. I put this out on Twitter earlier. There was this one user. Her name was Living on a Dream. She said that Elon Musk is standing up for freedom of speech with his Twitter stock purchase. And there are a lot of Elon Musk supporters who are not happy with Twitter, yes, and the way that they have censored people in the past. So that's an interesting side to this, too. There are definitely people cheering this guy on.
Yeah. Yes, and he is good at stirring the pot with his Twitter account, putting up the polls and asking people what they want. And he did allude to less regulation. And of course, that has a lot of conservatives encouraged that perhaps maybe the former president's account, President Trump's account, might be reinstated. But, you know, Elon Musk, he is definitely stirring the pot and asking, you know, what changes people want on Twitter. Another poll he had was, do you want an edit button? And I think over 4 million people responded to that, and over 73%, I think, said, yes, we need an edit button. And Twitter said, you know, hey, we're already working on that.
Listen, I'm all for the edit button, so hopefully that happens. Okay, Nancy, thank you so much. Coming up, a serious story, a really disturbing story. A beautiful blonde Instagram influencer and her handsome, successful boyfriend get into a brawl, leaving one dead. The twist, he was dead and she was covered in blood, but allegedly without a scratch on her. Is it a case of self-defense or is it murder? Her unusual behavior, that some say, is very telling. That's coming up. Welcome back to Banfield. Looks like something out of a horror story. On Sunday, April 3rd, police responded to a domestic disturbance call at a luxury Miami condominium. What they found was jaw-dropping. Shocking video obtained by TMZ shows a woman, 25-year-old Courtney Clenny, covered in blood and handcuffed. Police say she stabbed her boyfriend, 27-year-old Christian Mbumzeli, in the shoulder amid a struggle. Christian was rushed to a hospital but succumbed to his injuries, and questions are swirling around Christian's death, particularly surrounding her peculiar behavior after her boyfriend's death. Here is a statement from Christian's brother posted to Instagram just a short time ago. We have seen videos of Courtney kissing her dogs while covered in what we believe to be my brother's blood and casually getting drinks at a hotel bar days later while my brother lays in the morgue. The bottom line is inextricably clear. Courtney is being treated differently because of her privilege as a wealthy white woman. Courtney acknowledges that Toby did not have a weapon. She has no injuries to support her story of imminent danger. Additionally, Courtney still has yet to explain exactly what happened leading up to Toby's murder, we have every reason to believe that his death was the result of unwarranted and unprovoked violence. This is really got a lot of different weird twists to it. Joining me now to answer the questions on everyone's mind are Caitlin Becker, senior reporter for DailyMail.com, and Mark Eyeglash, a criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor. Caitlin, I want to start with you. What's the latest you're hearing tonight? People on social media, at least, I've noticed all day, they are really taking sides on this one.
People are very, very much split when it comes to a situation like this. I mean, it has all of the makings for huge headlines, and it had to have a huge following online. I mean, you have this very young, very beautiful couple. She's an influencer. She has something like 2 million followers on Instagram. She makes a majority of her money on OnlyFans, which is an adult website. So you're going to see people more and more invested in a situation like this, particularly because there's so many questions. And as you described in the beginning, it's a female perpetrator. Alleged perpetrator, and that video of her covered in blood. So you have a lot of people on social media looking at her as an alleged victim of domestic abuse who defended herself, and then the other camp saying this was a totally unprovoked attack and that she just went after him for absolutely no reason. His family is, of course, firmly in that camp, and they have been speaking out on social media and on a GoFundMe demanding justice, or demanding that at least authorities do something. They have not put forward any charges. They haven't arrested Courtney. So everything seems a little bit in limbo right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned that video. I mean, her covered in blood, it really is like a horror movie. Mark, I want to get to you, but first I want to read you a statement. Courtney's lawyer, and let's remember that she has not been charged with anything. So let me read this to you, and I'm going to get your response on the other side. This is her lawyer. It is a case of self-defense. Without getting into details about what occurred in the apartment, I can tell you that there was a physical altercation between Courtney and Mr. Umbumzelli. At some point, he attempted to choke Courtney. He thereafter charged at her, and she had no choice but to defend herself. She was in fear for her life, and Mr. Umbumzelli was in the act of committing a forcible felony, to wit, a burglary with a battery. We expect the City of Miami Police Department and the State Attorney's Office to close their investigation in the near future. Okay, so Mark, does she have a case for self-defense here?
Well, her lawyer believes so, and I'm friendly with her lawyer, and her lawyer is intelligent, passionate, and has a lot of experience here in the criminal arena. I don't think he would have said that unless he believes that the evidence supports it. It really comes down to, for every action, there's a reaction. She's claimed she was choked in the room. Okay, well, then we would see physical injury consistent with that. There are reports, apparently, of neighbors claiming that they saw physical violence between him and her in at least days leading up to this. That all is going to play a big role in this, because if he's been physical with her ever in the past, then that obviously placed her in greater fear of imminent death or great bodily harm. That's what she's got to show.
And what if they don't find any injuries on her? I mean, what if there's no marks and there's nothing? Can that self-defense claim still stand up, Mark?
You know, everything is fact sensitive. We've seen in so many high profile cases that it really just depends on the facts. What helps her is that there wasn't a busload of nuns in the room to watch what occurred. We have to rely heavily upon her word, the same way in the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case, we were forced to rely upon what, what he was saying, Zimmerman was saying, because dead people don't tell tales, unfortunately. So we don't know what his version is. So the question is what she's saying consistent with or inconsistent with the physical evidence that they're gathering, that they're observing, that they're preserving, hopefully?
Okay, Caitlin, I want to show you this and get your reaction, because this story took a very strange turn over the weekend, and it has to do with an Instagram video posted online. It shows Courtney being confronted at a bar just days after the stabbing. She was allegedly at a bar just days after her boyfriend is dead, and she's accused of stabbing him to death. Let's take a look at this video.
I'll videotape her right now. You should go. Yeah, you should go. Because you just killed your boyfriend. Yeah, you did. Yeah, and yeah. Yeah, okay, cool.
Wow, the world of social media is so crazy, Caitlin. I mean, someone else spotted Courtney because they saw her from social, knew her from social media, and then recorded her out at a bar and said, "What the heck are you doing here?" After what's transpired over the last several days. I mean, what do you make of that video? That's pretty crazy.
So first, I want to put the video into a little bit of context. Her attorney said that she's at this hotel bar. That was her father who she was with, and she was there because she's staying at the hotel because she didn't want to stay in the apartment where the stabbing and the death happened. Now, I also want to point out, sort of going back to your original question about how split people are regarding this case, I think you really see a perfect example of this right here. This is a perfect stranger who recognized her and was furious that she is out seemingly getting a drink, regardless of why she is at that hotel, if she's staying there or not. Maybe it's not necessarily cocktail hour after you allegedly stabbed your boyfriend to death. That's a bit strange as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as social media is concerned in the court of public opinion, to be stepping out there and maybe going out for a drink or a bite to eat, this is kind of the time you're gonna want to lay low. And I did want to circle back quickly to a point that was made earlier about the neighbor saying that they visibly saw in the days leading up to this incident Christian being violent towards Courtney. After the incident, several people who were close friends of the couple also came out saying that they had never seen Christian violent toward her, but had in fact witnessed violent episodes where she, Courtney, was the alleged aggressor. So I'm curious how that may come into play as to whether or not this self-defense claim is going to hold up.
Yeah, I'm curious about all of it. Real quick, Mark, we only have a few seconds left, but that video of her out on the town after this happened. Her attorney did make clear that was not a bar. The incident occurred in the lobby of a hotel. Sent us a statement about that. But if that came into evidence, I mean, that surely doesn't make her look very good.
No, but really, what value is there? I mean, the issue, it doesn't shed any additional light on what occurred at the moment that she believed that her life was in danger. That doesn't mean anything. In the court of public opinion, go spew ahead, everybody. How is someone supposed to be acting after either a murder or them being a victim? Who the heck knows? Judgment's the thief of serenity. Go ahead, yak all you want. But the issue is whether the evidence supports this being a murder or whether it's self-defense.
Right. And obviously, the court of law is a lot different than the court of Instagram and in the other social media sites where these folks are part of. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark and Caitlin. Appreciate it so much for you coming on tonight.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
Okay, coming up, if you thought it was impossible for the situation in Ukraine to become more brutal, well, think again. I want you to take a look at this man. He is taking control of the Russian military effort. He's got a resume of savagery, including the alleged use of chemical weapons. And we may have just gotten our first glimpse of his work in Ukraine. We're going to get into that coming up next. It is hard to believe that things in Ukraine can actually get worse for the civilian population, but it just did. Ivana Klimpush is the chair of the Ukrainian Committee for Entry into the EU. She posted to Twitter this afternoon, 1.5 hours ago, Russia used an unknown substance in Mariupol. Victims experiencing respiratory failure, most likely chemical weapons. This is a red line beyond which the world must destroy the economy of despotism. We demand full embargo on all fuels from Russia and heavy weapons to Ukraine now. Now, if these reports are true, it is yet another thick red line crossed in a tactic the new general leading Vladimir Putin's disastrous war is all too familiar and comfortable with. The Russian president just appointed General Alexander Dvornikov, the man known throughout the region as the Butcher of Syria, to take over military command in Ukraine for the next phase of the battle. According to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, the reports we're seeing of a change in military leadership and putting a general in charge who is responsible for the brutality and the atrocities we saw in Syria shows that there's going to be a continuation of what we've already seen on the ground in Ukraine. And that's what we are expecting. A lot to unpack. Here to help us understand that, I'll make a little more sense of it, News Nation correspondent Kelly Beeson. Kelly, this general comes with quite a reputation.
Well, he certainly does, Brian. He's known for brutal tactics and reportedly called by some the butcher of Syria for his record of brutality against civilians. Now, up to this point, Russia had no central war commander on the ground. The decision to establish new leadership comes as Russia gears up for that expected push to expand Russian control in Ukraine's east and south, including the Donbass. The failure to win full control of Ukraine's skies has hampered Moscow's ability to provide air cover for troops on the ground, limiting their advances and likely exposing them to greater losses. With their offensive in many parts of the country thwarted, Russian forces have relied increasingly on bombarding cities, a strategy that's left many urban areas flattened and killed thousands of people.
Sadly, we can all expect that those same brutal tactics, that same disregard for civilian life and civilian infrastructure will probably continue as they now focus in a more geographically confined area in the Donbass.
The new Ukraine war commander to take centralized control of this next phase of battle is General Alexander Vornikov, a career military officer who fought during the second war in Chechnya and took several positions before being placed in charge of the Russian troops in Syria in 2015. Under his command, Russian forces were known for crushing dissent, in part by destroying cities, lobbing artillery, and dropping barrel bombs in sustained attacks that displaced millions of Syrian civilians. A war killing more than 350,000 people.
For the people on the ground, I would absolutely be scared due to the fact of the human rights abuses that we saw in Syria. His actions in other conflicts, including Chechnya, are something to be scared of. You know,
Andriy Dobryansky of the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America says the change of leadership is a desperate move in the sense that it's clear Putin doesn't trust a lot of people around him, adding it will be Vornikov who will have to answer to Putin directly if more land in Ukraine isn't controlled by Russia in a short amount of time.
By immediate, I probably mean something close to May 9th, which is a major holiday in Russia, where they've had military parades honoring their soldiers for decades. Dvornikov has the trust of Putin right now, but that is something that's very fickle and may not last for a long time.
Now, the new leadership comes as Ukrainian authorities have already accused Russian forces of committing atrocities, including massacres, killing civilians. Brian.
Right when you think things can't get worse, Kelly, they just seem to. Thank you so much for that tonight. Okay, coming up, we've got a tough one for you. TSA agents at Boston's Logan's Airport made an interesting discovery. Look at this, on someone going through security. This is a tweet that they put out. We're hiding part of it because we want to reveal it after this break, see what you think. It says, yesterday, TSA officers Boston Logan discovered this blank inside of a cane. So what do you think could possibly be hidden inside the width of a corner, inside that cane? Take a guess. We'll have the answer for you coming up after the break. Okay, so did you take a stab at tonight's question? Check out the full tweet now. That was actually a hint, stab. Yesterday, TSA officers discovered this hidden blade inside of a cane when questioned by Massachusetts State Police. The man claimed he had no idea the blade was there, and they ended up letting him go when he surrendered. So look at that. You never know what these guys are going to find. That's it for tonight. I'll be back filling in for Ashley tomorrow night. Marnie and Leland join us now. I mean, you got to wonder, like, these TSA people find the there's probably so much stuff they don't even tell us about, crazy stuff
then
that they find.
Then there's all the stuff they miss, right?
True.
Like all the guns and knives.
Yeah.
And
the canes they did not find. Yeah.
That's scary to think about, too. Yeah.
All right. Good
on
job
that note,
tonight, Brian.
Great job,
Thank
Brian.
Thank you.